Good morning, Australia. Good evening, America. And hello to everyone listening across the world today. For those of you watching from LinkedIn Live and Facebook Live, welcome. You're listening to your host, Tony Lontis, on Radio Tony Everyday Business. And just a quick reminder, Radio Tony has its own website where you can catch up on all the news from each of the radio shows. We also have Lisa's amazing blogs going up live each week, which are to talk about what we've talked about in the previous shows. You can connect with me directly there or via any of the social media platforms where you see Tony Lontis or Radio Tony. Welcome to those listening live on YouTube. So we are going ahead with our next in the series of Everyday Business with Lisa Coletta and the Governance Collective. Now, just a little bit to remind you about Lisa. She is passionate about corporate governance, and she's a change leader who leads a collective group of senior specialists who drive, shape, and move governance corporations in the right direction. And she does this by implementing policy, frameworks, processes into businesses and corporations. She's worked in both the public and private sector, and she holds a master's degree in management, a postgraduate applied corporate governance from the Governance Institute, and is a graduate of the Australian Institute of Company Directors Intensive Course. She's also a certified NLP programmed coaching practitioner, a fellow of the Australian Institute of Company Directors, associate member of the Governance Institute, formerly known as the Chartered Secretaries. I'm glad we don't use that secretaries terminology too much anymore. Pretty glad about that. And she's the member of the Australian Board of NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. So last week, Lisa and I had a detailed discussion on organizational structure, why it's important, and how it aligns with business mission, vision, strategy, and planning. And this week, we want to delve more into the HR side of roles within companies and businesses, performance management, and of course, heart-centered leadership. Now, we are pretty passionate about heart-centered leadership and believe between the two of us that we will hear more and more about heart-centered leadership as we go into the next decade. I, for one, believe that we are in the midst of a huge, big series of changes across the planet. And if you're not have strategies within your business that encourage the concepts of heart-centered leadership, you will fall behind what is considered a must across corporations and businesses around the world. So, good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I hope you're well. Great to be here.
I am indeed. I actually think of Lisa most mornings because, and I'll digress a little, but it kind of leads into the things that we'll be talking later on. Lisa put me in contact with a spiritual guru, and she sends daily tip-offs. Every morning when I listen to my daily tip-off, I always think of Lisa. So it's a really lovely way to be connected to my co-host in an intangible way. And as we go further, we'll talk about some of those concepts further on. But today, we want to start with teams, team management, and heart-centered leadership, and what it looks like to lead teams in that way in the business. Over to you, Lisa.
So it's great to be here, Tony. And yes, I guess when it comes to being a leader in an organization, we have lots of different kinds of challenges. But the thing I hear most of when I speak to these senior leaders in the business around what keeps them awake at night, it's all about teams and team members and individuals' performance and having these tough conversations around whether people are or aren't delivering on the expectations and the outcomes that the organization requires. And so today, Tony, I thought we'd actually have a bit of a chat about the different ways great governance frameworks can actually assist leaders in delivering great performance processes that help them have those difficult
Yes.
conversations and help them do it in a way that they're actually a heart-centered governing leader. And I know that in past shows we've defined what governance is, and we've talked about defining and drawing
Yes.
those lines and making sure that people are really clear about those accountabilities. And today, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about what kinds of mechanisms are available for people out there, for business leaders out there who may not already have formalized performance processes in place to be able to monitor the effectiveness and the efficiency of the people that are doing the work for them to move the organization towards their goals. So I thought we'd talk a bit
So,
about that.
Lisa, I know in dealing with business and corporations that people have some fear associated with the concept of performance management. But really, it's actually quite simple, isn't it?
Look, it is actually quite simple. And I think part of the reason why all of us have fear over this process is because we've all had a bad experience, all three, around when it
Yes.
comes to individuals sitting down and giving us feedback. And I don't know about you, Tony, but I've always been really, really open to receiving constructive feedback. But I have had a couple of leaders that unfortunately haven't handled that process very well. I've got a couple of examples. I remember having one leader who actually kept a special notebook, and every time I did something he wasn't very happy with, he'd write it down in this little notebook, and then once a year we'd sit down and he would give me all the stuff I did wrong for the whole year that he'd written down in this notebook, which was really quite terrible for me. And I'll be honest, I was much younger then, and I'd sit there just totally horrified. And I remember my first response was, if you told me at the time that you had this
Yes.
expectation and I wasn't meeting it, I could have done something about that. Now telling me 12 months later or 10 months later or 6 months later,
Yes.
it doesn't really enable me to be able to change my behavior. I feel like this is a list of, the least the naughty list. And what do you
Yes.
suggest I do differently? What is it that you want me to do? You're telling me all the things you don't want me to do. What is it that you want me to do? Because every time I ask the question, how's everything going? I'd always get a really great, oh, everything's great, great, great response. So some of the leaders out there
Oh, yeah.
are trained to do this stuff, and some of us have had really bad experiences, and we've kind of been scarred for life over the process, if you know what I mean, unfortunately.
I agree, Lisa. I too enjoy that process of constructive feedback because I'm invested in improving myself all the time. But I have had it used in a way which is paramount to bullying, quite
Absolutely.
frankly.
Yeah.
And that's never okay, is it?
Well, look, it isn't. And it's kind of one of those things where it's a difference between a heart-centered governing leader, a heart-centered leader being really clear about right up front about what their expectations are and having a real conversation heart to heart, human to human, as
Yes.
opposed to individuals who see the performance appraisal process as another opportunity to exert their power over someone else.
Yes.
And that's where the challenging part is, Tony. And as I said, we've all had it. We've all had experiences where individuals are really, really great at smacking in hindsight, but aren't very
Yes.
good at defining right up front what the expectations are of the individual in that role. In some cases, if you'd actually know what the expectations are of you up front, you might actually be able to call it and say, this is just not the right job for me because I can't deliver on those expectations.
Yes.
As opposed to
Yeah.
getting in there and doing the right, doing your job, thinking everything's totally fine. And there's some of those really unfortunate avoidant leaders out there who just can't position the real conversation up front. And what I found too,
Yeah.
that the more work you do pre-work, more pre-work you do right up front, the easier the conversation is later. And in other
Yeah.
words, when we think of performance appraisals, most people think of this sit down, you get beaten up over all the things you've done wrong, and away you go. These
And it
days,
shouldn't be like that.
it shouldn't be like that. It really shouldn't be like that. And it's actually a bit of a disservice, not only for the leader to behave that way, but also for the individual, because as a leader, you're not getting the best out of that person. You're not creating a really great two-way open communication process and a great environment where individuals are actually working together to deliver and meet on those goals. The ideal really is to look at the performance appraisal as a couple of prongs or a couple of sort of components to it. The first part
Yes.
of a performance appraisal is actually setting the objectives and the expectations right up front so that everyone's really clear about what is it that we're actually expecting from you. What type of time frame? What does it look and feel like? And then, of course, you utilize that as the basis of the check-in points. And some organizations does do the check-in 6 monthly. Sometimes I do the 3 monthly.
Yes.
And of course, there's a 12-month or annual appraisal process where typically some organizations choose to link that to the reward and recognition process. You know, whether you go up a grade or you get additional pay
Yes.
or whatever else,
Or get a bonus.
get a bonus or whatever else. What I do find though, Tony, is that some better practice organizations adopt a much more holistic view to the appraisal process. And one of the things that we do at the Governance Collective is we help organizations build a much more holistic approach to building performance appraisals with their people. And they actually start with the end in mind, and that is around delivering the strategy of the organization. What I'd like to share with you now, if you're happy for me to do so, is a nice little
Yes,
diagram.
please.
The holistic process. And this is around the lens with this, keep in mind, is around governance and delivering great transparent processes so that decision makers in the business can make the right decisions. Because keep in mind, even the decision makers in a business also have performance appraisals. So even if you're a CEO and
Yes.
you have a board, you still are actually going through a process of demonstrating that you're delivering on the outcomes so that you get your performance
Yeah.
bonus if what you've actually got in mind or that's what you've actually got in place. So for those of you that are out there listening and can't see this diagram, I will be providing it. It'll be available as part of the blog that will be released through Tony's website as well as my own. But I will describe it
Yes.
to you just so that everyone's on the same page, just in case people aren't actually viewing it online. So the basis of this model is to deliver better governing oversight. In other words, the oversight by the board or by the management, by senior leaders can actually be undertaken at each part within the process or within the framework. And it actually starts with the organization having a strategy. Now, most businesses have some sort of strategy. Better businesses have a documented strategy, even if it's just a strategy on a page. And we've helped quite a few businesses build that so that they're really clear on where they're actually going within the next 5 to 10 years. And then they build a business plan, which is the operational plan that shows how the business is actually going to take the steps to move towards the goals within the strategy. When we talked about risk management last week, Tony, we actually talked about
Yeah.
undertaking assessments of risk. The context that better organizations use when they're actually assessing risk at a more strategic level is they look at the risks associated with the organization delivering on their business plan and their strategy. And what they do is they put in really great risk management processes and a little dashboard, which is what we've got recommended here on our diagram, that actually looks realistically at what's going to get in our way to deliver on our strategy and what is it that we need to actually manage on an ongoing basis to make sure that our strategy can be realized. And so once the risk processes are in place, including treatment plans for anything that they've actually got to do a little bit more work on to improve it, they can then build a scorecard or a great performance mechanism to show whether they're moving towards the business plan goals or not. And that's then able to be disseminated through the organization into individuals' performance appraisals. So we talked last week too about values and behaviors and ethics. In organizations. And we touched very briefly on how ethics and values are a really important part of the performance appraisal process. And here is the context, I guess, or the component that I briefly touched on. And that was that individual performance appraisals ideally actually have a couple of components to them. They obviously have their day job, the work that they're actually doing on an ongoing basis, but better practices we find have three components, and that is the individual will be demonstrating how they delivered on the values and behaviors of the organization that they're working in. They have an accountability for delivering on the business plan items that are actually moving the organization towards their goals. And they also have a day job. And that accountabilities of the day job is actually defined in a role description. Part of the accountabilities in the role description or the job description typically can include any treatments or any actions they need to help the organization in managing risk. And we find that this overall model, Tony, enables boards to be able to oversight effectively. It enables board committees, risk committees to be able to oversight effectively. And what it also does, it actually helps individuals understand and own, when it's co-created, how they're actually moving the organization towards the broader goals. And they feel more valued because they're part of the bigger picture. Excuse me, and they can see they're actually part of that as well.
Yeah. Lisa, at this, there was a couple of quotes that I found when I was doing my research for our session today, and one of them is, when employees are happy, they feel invested in the organization's goals and are more compelled to work. Happiness increases productivity, which leads to a higher engagement. So happy employers are also more present within their day job. And that investment in the human element of a business or organization is a profit-making proposition. So the things that Lisa and I are talking about today, if you do them properly, they are directly related back to the profit the corporation or business will make. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. The happier your employees are, the more they get done. They're more likely to come to work every day. And, we all want to be happy in our lives and in our work environments. And we all want to move towards something that's meaningful and important. And we want to contribute to something that's important as well. So, what I find with this, Tony, is that the more that an individual can co-create their objectives and what they need to deliver as part of the
Yes.
performance setting process, the more engaged they are and the more they understand how their contribution is important and actually feeds, links into the bigger picture. And it actually also means that they're more invested and they're actually happily moving, doing the work and moving towards the goals. In fact, we've got a really great sub-model, and I haven't shown it on the diagram here today, where when an individual and their manager sits down to talk about their performance objectives of the year, we like to use a little model where the individual rates or defines from 1 to 5 what good looks like and what great looks like and what failure looks like. And the reason why, so in other words, so imagine a spreadsheet or a document, it could be a Word document or a spreadsheet, where there's a particular objective there. Say, for example, the individual's role is to upload socials on social media every day. It's just a silly little example, but it's an action. They have a daily action and they need to do it by 9 o'clock every day. The way that it's measured is whether or not it actually got done or not. And so typically you might set that objective and then at the end of 12 months or at the end of 6 months, you go, did you do it or didn't you do it? Yeah, I sort of did. Let's be really clear about what good looks like and what's important about that particular objective. For example, the 9 o'clock part might be really, really important because everyone is sitting down over their coffee at that time and, that's when they're reading their socials. And maybe 9 o'clock's not the right time, but this is an example nonetheless. What does failure look like? No upload. It didn't happen. That's it. You actually get a score of 0 for that objective if the uploads don't happen or never happen. You might find that 80% of the time they happen and that's satisfactory, but 50% of the time if they don't happen, that's unsatisfactory. And so what you're actually doing is you have a column for with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're actually stating in each column what does good look like, what does amazing look like, as well as what does not delivering look like. And you set that up all up front. And what that then means is that in 12 months' time or 6 months' time or whatever that frequency of conversation is occurring, you can actually sit down and say, okay, Tony, let's look at the data. Let's make this process factual. Show me how many times you hit the 9 o'clock time frame. Show me how many times you hit the, 10:30 time frame. Show me how many times it never happened. And then you can sit down and have a real conversation about where they actually played or where they actually landed. But what it also means for the leader, especially these heart-centered governing leaders that really don't like to have to deliver bad news, you can say, well, based on the data you've given me, it looks like I need to score you a 1 here and not a 5 because based on your data, you haven't delivered. And it's not a surprise to you that
Tell
we're
me
having
this.
a, but yeah, because you've got the data and you know how you're performing. And you knew right up front what the expectations were because you helped us set them. So it's kind of, I think,
So there's it's important to have your staff or members of your team engaged in the development of performance appraisals, and to have some sort of ownership of not only the process but the content of the appraisals.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And keep in mind, of course, that leaders have a better, much more holistic view of what's happening across the organization. So don't expect your
Yes.
employees to get it spot on right, because they don't actually have the same view that the leader does around what's required of them. There may be things coming up that you know of that your team member doesn't know of right now. So you can't expect them to
Yes.
produce a perfect list of the accountabilities that they need to deliver on if you're in an environment where they need to be a little bit agile. But the more involved they are, the more they own it. And the more they own it, the more
Yeah.
they'll do it. That's what it really comes down
Yeah,
to.
yeah.
If they own it, they'll do it. If
So
they
it,
don't own it, they won't do it.
yeah. So it really sort of comes down to a negotiation between the employer or manager and the employee, and the better that negotiation is around this process in particular, the outcomes are twofold. One for the employee and the other for the business or the organization. Because if you're invested in something that you've helped develop, you're going to be more able to participate, feel more able to give feedback and accept feedback as well, if you've been
Absolutely.
part of that process.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part of it too, which I think is really, really important, Tony, is that when you open up a conversation like this between you and your employee, if you're one of those heart center governing leaders, what ends up happening is that that conversation is just the starting point of a conversation. So
Yes.
even though we might be formally talking about performance objectives in this meeting today, the conversation doesn't need to end in that room and then we go off and do whatever we want until we talk again for another 6 months. What it really means
Yes,
then is
yes.
that if something comes up, say for example, you're my leader and you and I have agreed on some really great performance metrics, and I'm totally comfortable and happy with what we've agreed, but I have another leader in the organization approach me and advise me that he has a really critical project that he needs my involvement in. And so he
Right.
might have spoken to you about it and he said, look, Tony, can I borrow Lisa for, half a day a week to do XYZ because,
Yes.
it's really critical that Lisa helps us with our part of delivering against the strategy. And you agree, yep, you can have Lisa half a day a week. But what it then means
Yes.
is that I've got a half a day less a week to deliver on the accountabilities and the activities that
Yes.
we've already agreed on. And so when I find out that you've loaned me to the other leader, you may or may not actually talk to me about it first. And it's nice to have the conversation instead of being told you're being loaned to someone else. We've all been there, right? We've been told, oh, by the way, you're working for them a week. Oh, that's news to me. And you may be okay with it, and you may not be. It's one of those things where we can actually sit down and I can say, so Tony, I've actually got an additional half a day a week worth of work. And I, from a role standpoint, I am spending 150% of my time, available time, getting already what I've got to get done.
Yes.
Something's got to give, Tony. So what do you say that instead of expecting me to do the socials every day at 9 o'clock, I'll do them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we'll get a team member to do them 2 days a week to enable me to have the capacity to be able to
Yes.
deliver on the other accountabilities as well. And I know this is probably a good example, but what my point is that sometimes for employees, it's really hard for them to speak up when they feel like they're already fully loaded and they're being loaded up more and more and more. It's
Yes.
hard for employees to speak up sometimes. Sometimes employees are scared to speak up because they're concerned
Yes.
that they're going to be, blamed because they, don't have the extra bandwidth. And, some of us do have a little bandwidth and we're happy to kind of move with that. But some of us find that we're already fully loaded.
Yes.
And that additional thing is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Leaders
And
really,
takes it over the top.
yeah, exactly. And leaders, I mean, from a personal leadership style standpoint for me, I like to think my role is to coach, guide, and lead. And that means
Yes.
that I'd like to have the right type of relationship with my employees so they feel they can
Yes.
come and talk to me if they've got concerns or issues. They are worried about their workloads, or they have got things going on at
Yeah.
home.
Yeah.
Any number of things can play out where them delivering on the goals that we've agreed might actually be impacted in some way. And
Yeah.
so I like to think that these performance appraisal, these performance setting conversations are really the starting point in leaders and individuals building the right kind of relationship for them to have the real conversations when they need to. And having
Yes,
these conversations
definitely.
in a win-win way. In other words, I'm not the leader and it's like, oh, here we go. Here's all the excuses that you're going to give me around why you're not going to be able to get the work done. It's actually more of a heart-centered, let's hear what you've got to say and let me understand with a little of
How?
empathy. Yeah.
Yeah, because we hear it so often that rather than you've got your normal workload and bang, you're given something else. And rather than negotiating or discussing how that impacts what you currently do, it's lumped on top. And so employees face that overload. I know that for a lot of corporations and businesses are in a quite a stressed situation at the moment, and there is work and additional work being given to employees without that negotiation around, well, actually, I can deliver this, this, and this, but I might struggle with this. It's really important if you don't want to overload your employees, and if you want to have happy, healthy employers, the leaders within that business or organization have to take into account the impacts of additional work and structure the workload across other people or revisit their expectations about around that particular role. Again, this year in particular, if ever there's been a year for people to be stressed, worried about losing a job, not feeling like they can say, no, I can't do that extra amount of work, they're saying, well, yes, because they're worried about the state of their job or what might happen in the future. But in a wonderful working environment, there would be consideration for anything that changes within that role at any time, wouldn't there?
Oh, look, there would absolutely. And one of the things that I would recommend to our listeners around how to have these conversations in a really heart-centered way, I've always liked the idea of not just coming to your leader with a problem, but also a solution.
Yes.
It's kind of one of those things where, again, and maybe it's just me, but from a pure work style perspective, I don't see problems, I see challenges. And I
Yes.
like to come up with ways where everybody wins. So, as an employee, I would never go to my leader and say, well, I can't do this and this now, it's your problem, and walk away and just get done what I do and draw these really strong lines in a way that it isn't actually an open two-way conversation where we land in a win-win position
Yes.
where everyone's happy. I would rather go to my leader and say, look, I've been thinking about this half a day a week that we talked about and happy to do the work.
Yeah.
So, it was a great opportunity for me for my resume. I know we're pretty tight right now because we can't hire more people, and I know that, obviously I value my job, blah, blah, blah. But I've been talking to Tina, who sits three desks away from
Yes.
me, and she's really interested in the social media stuff that I do. And when I mentioned to her that I might need to do this, and I'm not sure I'll be able to get that done every day, she said she'd love the experience and the opportunity to do that.
Yes.
And she said she can do that and she has capacity. So, come to your leader with some ideas and some examples around how this can work out well for everyone, where everyone wins. And also we're leveraging the skills of the people around us, but we're also leveraging the opportunity for people to learn and grow. Great heart-centered, loving leaders create environments where people learn and grow. And it's actually because they want to learn and grow. It's naturally organic. Organic learning and organic growth, as opposed to these power plays and people start shutting down and you'll end up getting, quite minimal outcomes and you don't have happy people. And yeah, it's important.
And that leads us into one of the subjects that we really wanted to talk about today, and that's the role of heart-centered leadership. And that's about caring for your employees and leading in a way that helps them grow, helps the business grow, and ultimately impacts the profit of a business or corporation in a positive way, isn't it?
Look, absolutely, absolutely. And there's actually been quite a bit of studies, and there is a group in the US that focus around heart-centered leadership. And For me, when I consider what a heart-centered leader is, and also, I guess, more so, which is my primary focus, consider what heart-centered individuals do when they're in positions of power. There are some really
Yes.
fundamental behaviors that
Yes.
play out when someone's a heart-centered leader in a governing role. And of course, all of us.
Yes.
Any level of managerial roles have got a governing component to what we do. You don't actually have to be on a board executive to be in a governing role. As a leader who has to implement policy that's been approved by a board, you're actually in a governing role. You are still oversighting the application of that particular policy or that particular requirement at a local level. It's the main things to consider is that there are quite a few factors around whether you're actually a heart-centered governing leader or not. So if our listeners out there today are sitting back going, gee, am I a heart-centered governing leader? I've never really thought about it.
Is my
Well,
boss a heart-centered leader?
well, in a lot of cases, we lead the way our managers or our bosses lead. And I know, Tony, we've talked before about my background and my history. I was an incredibly ego-centered leader. And I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know that I was an ego leader because I was in an environment where I learned to be a leader from all the leaders around me. And just because the behaviors were terrible, they were acceptable, they were still terrible, but because the behaviors were acceptable, I got along to get along. And I actually chose to do what everyone else was doing because it was actually far easier for me to be like everyone else than to actually be my true self. And this is what I say to leaders out there who actually do have, really serious accountabilities. You know that you're a heart-centered governing leader when you actually feel it in your body that your actions actually sit right for you. If they actually sit right, if you've got any level of intuition within you that makes you go, yeah, that sits right, and you can actually feel it in your heart and not actually know it's coming from your head, you're a heart-centered governing leader. And as part of that heart-centered piece, you're actually considering, instead of reacting, you're responding, and you're actually going through a bit of a process. When you're actually hearing information, you're receiving information, when you're getting ready to respond, there are lots of different perspectives and factors that you consider before you respond, as opposed to that, what's in it for me? How can I exert my authority? How can I make sure I'm big and everyone else feels small? If you're actually automatically jumping into that place and space, you know that you may want to consider doing a little bit of work around your leadership style and starting to be really true to yourself because you'll be feeling within you something not sitting right. And the word for it is incongruence. You will be feeling incongruent between yourself, and the congruence is between your head, your heart and your gut. Head, heart, and gut alignment enables you to be a heart-centered governing leader. And I've got another little slide to show you, Tony, just to help listeners a little bit more when my S's actually come out of my mouth properly, to help govern individuals in these roles get a really good picture of what one is versus what one isn't. And provided that technology behaves itself today. It is the Mercury retrograde that's up our technology, by the way. The small sign of Mercury. Thank you, Mercury, for being in being where it is right now.
Because it's messing things up. There we go. It's beautiful.
Mercury in retrograde messes up and plays with technology. Absolutely, as well as a few other things. So the slide in front of us. The diagram or the slide in front of us, Tony, actually shows some of the characteristics of a heart-centered governing leader versus an egocentric leader. And I know that there is, everyone has a certain level of ego, and a certain level of ego isn't a bad thing. Ego has got a purpose, and we can talk a little bit about that in future shows. Great heart-centered governing leaders use their true heart, their real heart space position to hold those strong lines. And typically, the lines that we're talking about are governance lines. And those governance lines ideally have been put in place by heart-centered leaders. So we know the lines are in the right spot for the business and for the individuals, but we use our true heart and we still hold strong lines. So one of the things that I find whenever I talk to leaders around heart-centered governing leadership, they have this automatic perception that leaders that use their hearts must be pushovers. That they must be
It's definitely
soft.
not the case, though.
It is definitely not the case. If you are a heart-centered governing leader, you're still using your heart, but you're holding strong lines, and those lines have been set for the right reason and for the right purpose. This actually comes to, and think about all the leadership training you've done in the past, Tony. I've done lots of it. All of us have done lots of leadership and management training. What we learn in management and leadership training is what to do and how to do it and why we do it. What we don't learn, what we never learn, is how to be while we're doing it. Heart-centered governing leadership is talking about setting up governing frameworks and lines and helping leaders how to be great heart-centered leaders. How to be, not what to do, not when to do it, not why we're doing it, how to actually be, how to behave, how to be. The heart-centered governing leaders use true hearts to hold those really, really strong lines. It doesn't mean they're a pushover. You can be heart-centered, but you can still have boundaries and still hold lines. They also have the inner strength to make and follow through on those tough decisions. But they don't flip and flop. Have you ever been around those leaders who make a decision and then they feel guilty and then they flip and then they go back on a bit of it and it's supposed to be applicable to everyone and then someone cries, put that person off the hook, and then they flip and flop and flop and flip and flip and flop. Those individuals are That incongruence that's feeling within their body is actually shifting constantly. They're heart-centered, but then their ego kicks in, and then someone cries, and then they think they're going to be sued, and then they flip and flop and flop and flip.
And if you want to think about tough decision making, let's talk about COVID in terms of leadership. And if you talk about COVID in leader in terms of leadership, there are tough decisions that had to be made for the greater good and protection of humanity.
Oh, look,
And
absolutely.
so a heart-centered leader will make those tough decisions and stand by them, knowing that it's for the better of humanity. So things like shutdowns and wearing masks and social distancing, all of those tough decisions, and they are tough decisions. If you're going to shut down an economy, that's a tough decision for a leader to make. And those leaders that have made those tough decisions, stood by them, will see the results that they determine are best for their country, state, whatever. And it's good to see some of that heart-centered leadership happening across the world, although I'm sure both of us could identify those that are not heart-centered leaders, in that, as you said, their decisions flip and flop dependent on popularity and popular view, whereas a tough decision that benefits the majority of the population, that's a tough decision to make, isn't it, Lise?
Look, it definitely is, Tony. It is. And it's one of those things, too, where it's actually about the perspective and the thinking process that gets undertaken when these decisions are made. The broader the perspective around options available and the potential outcomes and impact of that decision making, the more effective the decision making is. And again, this comes back to governance. The more transparency that an organization or a state or a country has around its performance and what's happening out there, the better we actually understand that, and the better the data is around performance and what's happening and what's working and what isn't. Keep in mind, COVID's a great example. We didn't know how to handle or deal with COVID.
No.
It was something that, anyone
And the
would
thing is, sorry, Lisa. The thing is that those leaders who make those tough decisions have a whole range of data and information that the rest of us don't have access to. So
Absolutely.
they know if you're talking about a particular estate or a country even, they know that if we have this amount of cases, this impacts on our health system. It impacts on our ability to do elective surgery. It impacts on a whole range of things that we have no knowledge, understanding, or data in front of us. It's the leader that has that broad perspective, and we as those watching our leaders need to understand that they have a much bigger perspective and a much broader view of what's happening. We only have our narrow view in terms of, oh my God, I'm locked down. I can't leave the house. This is really crappy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Versus a leader's perspective, which has a great more range of considerations. And so those heart-centered leaders making those tough decisions and sticking to them will come out on top because they've stuck to those tough decisions, therefore the betterment of a broader range of people, and they still know that it's going to be tough. They're still empathetic, aren't they, Lisa? They're still understanding.
Look, they definitely are. And keep in mind too that they're not only getting those perspectives and those positions from others, they're also getting
Yes.
forecast around consequences and outcomes. So
Yes.
they've got a much bigger picture around what the consequences are of their decision making or non-decision making
Yes.
and the outcomes
Yes.
associated with decision making and non-decision making. One of the things I think that it's easy, we tend to forget, and I mean we as in the general we, the royal we, the general
Yes. Yes.
we actually forget
Yes.
sometimes that not making a decision is actually a decision.
Correct. Correct. Not
So,
having a strategy, not having a plan is absolutely a decision.
it's a decision,
A
and
flawed one, but it's still a decision.
it's still a decision. So those individual or those leaders out there that are a little bit avoidant around decision making, you choosing to be avoidant because you don't feel you can, like I can't write my strategy down, my competitors will get it, I can't this, we can't that, all those we can'ts, that avoidant
Yeah.
behavior is actually still decision making. You've decided not to, so you there's still going to be consequences and outcomes associated
Correct.
with that decision to not make a decision or decision to put that layer of perspective around can't, shouldn't, didn't, don't
Yep.
want to. I want to get in, next election or whatever it is that are actually going on in individuals' minds. And so, in these
Yes.
heart-centered governing leaders, they're actually prepared to back themselves in the face of opposition. So, in other words,
Yep.
they do the work, they get the data, they make the decisions, they hold themselves true to those positions. And when they actually do get opposition, they're actually backing themselves, and they will actually, willingly
Yep.
go. Data, here's the bottom line. We couldn't keep another three
Yes.
more. We couldn't keep three ex extra people on because it meant the whole company would go down and 45 people would lose their jobs. And
Yeah.
I've had to say sorry to three people. Maybe when things pick up, we can bring them back on. But 45 people and the actual company actually, the company can actually remain, operating. Otherwise,
And
isn't
the greater good.
that's a
It's
greater.
that concept of the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good for all, and knowing the consequences and what the outcomes are and what they're actually driving towards to deliver from an outcome standpoint. The other thing too around heart-centered governing leaders is that they actually feel connected with humans because they are connected with
Yes.
humans. Hearts
Yes.
speak to hearts. Hearts speak to
Yep.
hearts. So you've got a great relationship with your employee or with an individual when you feel that your heart is speaking to their heart, not their head, not
Yeah.
their ear. So heart-centered
Yes.
governing leaders, they feel connected because they are connected. And as part of that, they're also supported.
Yes.
So I've actually had a couple of leaders where they were quite heart-centered. I felt connected and I felt supported by them. And even when they had to sit down and give me bad news, I still
Yes.
felt connected and I still felt supported. So there was soft landings, not hard landings.
Yeah,
So,
yeah, yeah.
certainly, your contract's up, bloody blur, but I'm going to provide you a soft landing. We're going to give you, XYZ. And I actually know of a couple of my contacts who are looking for someone like you. And here's their phone numbers. And if I can do anything else to support you, I'll give you a great, reference and, whatever it is, whatever the
Yes.
soft is,
Yeah.
that soft Approach is much more humanistic than a hard landing.
Yes.
Even
Yeah.
Tony, something as simple, and I know that this is a simple thing, when you're letting people go, there's a school of thought around moving people on, the difference between having a conversation on a Wednesday and having a conversation on a Friday. I don't know if you've ever heard of
Okay.
that.
No.
I'm sorry, I can't reference a specific study, but I'll actually look it up
Yes.
to remind
Yes.
myself. But there were studies done, and they actually looked at the difference between giving employees bad news on a Wednesday as opposed to giving employees bad news on a Friday.
Aha.
Getting bad news on a Wednesday means what happens on Thursday?
Shocking day for the employee or and everyone really.
Absolutely. People feel bad at work, people feel bad at home.
Yes.
Typically, those
Yes.
individuals. People are still working on Thursday and Friday. Sometimes people are
Yes.
told they're going to be finishing up by the end of the week, but they're aware of it on Wednesday. So they're actually still around people on Thursday and Friday, and they can actually process
That's
enormity around other humans because we don't actually know
yes.
who our people are going home to every day.
Yeah.
Whereas letting someone go on a Friday afternoon and telling them not to come back on Monday, they could be going home to an empty household. And they could be
Yeah.
faced with days being at home in an empty household as well. And so, from a are you okay health and well-being standpoint, it's really important that we create these. I mean, obviously, these conversations are hard for everyone involved, not just the person receiving the bad,
Yes.
even the person giving the bad news. It can be hard for them as
Yes.
well. But that midweek
Yeah.
conversation actually positions individuals from a well-being standpoint in a much better place than on a Friday, where they might be going home to
Okay.
living an empty house all weekend.
Yeah. Okay, and it allows them also to say their goodbyes and finalize things and give them some sort of closure. Is that my understanding, Lisa?
Absolutely, yeah, closure, but also a level of dignity. So one of the things that we've found around ego-centered leaders and ego-centered leaders who apply their power in certain ways is that while they're making
Yes.
themselves feel big, they're making other people feel small. And what they're doing by doing that is actually robbing individuals from the ability to have any level of dignity, personal dignity.
Yes.
Robbing another human from their own dignity is what kind of human does
A
that?
bad. That's not good. Not good at all.
You're not in a good place or space where the way you have to make yourself feel bigger is to make everyone else feel smaller. You know
Yeah.
you're not in a good space when you're actually doing that. So what we find is that with these ego-centered leaders, they define themselves by what they do and not who they are. In other words, they use their position title, I'm the chair of the board, everywhere, and it defines who they are, not who they actually
Yes.
really are. It's about what they do. They happen to be the chairman of the board of XYZ. That's great. It's not
Yes.
actually who they are. But
Yeah.
ego-centered leaders do that. So if there are individuals out there who see themselves as their position title and not as, husband, wife, sister, partner,
Yeah.
etc.,
Yeah.
lover of great food or whatever else,
Yeah,
have a bit of a
yeah.
think about whether you're ego-centered or not. The other thing they do is they play the blame game. So from
Yes.
an accountability
Yes.
standpoint, personal accountability standpoint, they don't take personal accountability for their own behavior, and they don't take personal responsibility for how other people feel because of their behavior.
Yes.
Now, while all of us,
Again,
sorry, Tanny.
very much thinking of some world leadership at the moment and those great leaders who stand up in front of us and go, gosh, messed up such and such, but here's the plan for what we're going to do to rectify that situation rather than going, I never said that, that's not correct, I never did that, etc. A
Yes, being
great heart-centered leader will stand up, take accountability for messing up and go, okay, I messed up, but here's what we're going to do going forward, rather
absolutely.
than just going, I never said that. I never did that. That's not true, you know?
Or it's someone else's fault, most definitely. Those great heart-centered
Yes.
government leaders who do that, Tony, also create an environment where other people learn by doing as well. They
Yes.
learn by
Yes.
doing. Learn by doing, it means sometimes it's going to play out okay and sometimes it might not. But the fact that A,
Yeah, that's right.
you own it, you learn and you fix it, and you leave that emotion behind is really, really important. Ego-centered
Yeah.
leaders play the blame game. Nothing ever touches
Yes.
them, but it's everyone else's fault and everyone else's problem.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
not a good look, and not a great behavior to have within the culture of your business, because we've got
No.
to keep in mind that leaders' behavior gets reflected on everyone. And as soon as
It
a leader's
does.
behavior is reflected on everyone, it then becomes the accepted behavior for everyone.
Yeah.
Because it's okay for my leader to run around and blame other people for not getting things done or whatever else and not taking any
Then that's
accountability.
okay for me.
And it's okay for me. And they talk about the behavior that you choose to walk past is a behavior you choose to accept. Well, guess what? As soon as it's
Yes.
okay for the senior leaders or the board to blame the CEO, it's then going to be okay for the CEO to blame their management team, and management will just roll it all down the line. And is that the kind of culture that
Yes.
moves organizations towards their goals? It's not. It really, really
No.
isn't. It isn't. One of the other characteristics of an ego-centered leader is those individuals out there, and I can think of a couple that I've been around, over time, where they're just
Yes.
self-reliant. They're so self-reliant
Yes.
that no one else can do it the way it needs to be done, so I have to do this myself. Because
Yep.
no one can do it as perfectly as the perfect job I can do. Ego-centered leaders
Yes.
don't use the teams that they have to actually achieve outcomes. Just because you can do it and you can do it well doesn't mean you should deny the opportunity for someone else on how to do it or learn how to do it
Yeah.
and get
Yeah.
learn how to do it well as well. Coaching, guiding,
Yes.
leading.
Yes.
Ego-centered, self-reliant, it's all about them. And they're the ones that
Yeah.
are the masters of the world. I worked 80 hours this week because my team are hopeless and I was the only one who could do it myself and no one else could get it done and all the
Yes.
rest of it. If leaders choose to actually take that approach, and I was in the board and I saw my CEO or my senior leader doing this, I would actually organize for that individual no longer have a team, because they're not behaving like a leader and they're not actually managing a team,
Okay. Yeah.
because
Yeah.
they're going
Yeah.
off and doing it all themselves. I'm sure they won't want that.
'Cause that's an important component of that style of leadership is to empower and engage their team to get to where they need to go as a group versus just the leader.
Leader. And that's why that holistic governance approach around individuals having performance objectives being set and being really clear
Yeah.
up front around what the expectations are is really, really important. So what tends to happen
Yes.
with egocentric leaders is that they don't design before they construct, or they don't have the conversation around what this should look like. They'll say to a team member,
Yes.
go do X, Y, and Z, and the team member, to the best of their ability, go off and do X, Y, and Z. They may actually ask
Yeah.
their leader for feedback and the leader has none. I've got no feedback. I pay you to do that. Go off and do it. And that individual will go off and do it. And then that egocentric leader will actually smack in hindsight. Well, I expected you to do this and
Yes.
this and that and this and that. And we've got no time now. So I've got to go off and do it all myself. Thanks so much. You're incompetent, blah, blah, blah. And
Yes.
that's the dynamics they create, because they're not taking a holistic performance view of delivering and doing that effectively
Yeah.
through utilizing the amazing individuals that they have in their business. Amazing individuals.
Yes. It's really a lot of that heart-centered leadership is about recognizing the strengths within your team, and your employees, and encourage them to develop, learn, and give the best that they can. But if you're picking on their weakness and bashing them around the head for that weakness, that's never going to bring out the gold that each employee has within them.
Absolutely. Most definitely. Tony, we've all seen it. We've all experienced it. And it can be very tiring for team members or, employees to be beaten
Yes.
about so much. They get to
Yeah.
the point where they're barely getting themselves to work because they know work's going to be hell.
Yeah.
And, the leaders are just, more and more just kind of degrading. Keeping in mind, of course, that all of us own our own feelings. The way we feel and the way we
Yes.
choose in that content and that feedback is on us as well. But if we're already worn
Yes.
down and we're actually in a position where we are feeling already quite flat and unsupported, it makes it very, very difficult
Yes.
to work every day.
Yeah.
With COVID, it's
Yeah.
actually harder because it's not like you can walk and find another job quickly. And that's
That's
what
right.
Yeah, so some of these heart-centered leaders kind of rely on the fact that, if you don't like it, walk. They know that some of the team members don't actually have the next place to walk into, really that quite
That's
easily.
right.
Yeah, and so of course that self-reliance also is linked to them seeing reaching out for support as a weakness. So they don't actually,
Yes.
and again, it's one of these mistakes that ego-centered leaders make where they're actually paying really great people to do really great work, and we typically hire in our own image. So these leaders might have
Yes.
amazing skills, but they've got this overlay of ego leadership on top of them, or over the top. And if speaking up when they're actually needing support is something that they just can't do, they won't do it. They'd rather struggle and do a half-rate job or not deliver at all instead of asking for support. And of course, an outcome of that is that they feel alone and they're disconnected.
Lisa, what a fabulous conversation we've had this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about culture, emotional intelligence, and some more on heart-centered leadership because we feel that it's really important to consider to keep talking about this subject. Now, just for Australian listeners, the US goes into a different time zone. So in Australia, we will be an hour later. Same time in the US, but an hour later for Australians. Lisa, thank you so much for a wonderful show yet again. Listeners, if you want to catch up on what we've talked about on this show, just jump onto radiotony.com. The blog will come out in a couple of days and you'll be able to recap on the show. And I hope you'll join us all next week for another session with Radio Tony Everyday Business and our amazing host, Lisa Coletta from the Governance Collective. If you need to get in contact with Lisa, please use our email support@governancecollective.com. And that, my friends, is your lot for this week. Over to you, TJ, and bye, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Yeah.